body lost, looking to get found. Know it when they hear the champion sound. Works like a magnet on the people all around. Know it when they hear the champion sound. Anybody loving music up in your town. Know it when they hear the champion sound. Love it when they hear the champion sound. Need it when they hear the champion. Watch out.
Take it on a wild dream.
She knows all about the champion sound. It was that sound ringing in her ears after the Fever won the WNBA championship at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Born with a hearing loss and a speech impediment, she channeled the anger and frustration that resulted from the taunts of the kids at school to become one of the greats of her game. She was an All-American in high school and college and a member of an undefeated national championship team at Tennessee. Forced to sit out a season after a career-threatening knee injury her senior year in college, she came back to win Rookie of the Year honors in the WNBA as a member of the Indiana Fever. Since then, all she's done is earn 8 All-Star bids in her 12 seasons, win Defensive Player of the Year 5 times, including this past season, and earn league MVP honors in 2011. She's also a 3-time Olympic gold medal winner, the past president of the WNBA Players Association, the winner of the League Sportsmanship Award in 2010, and has been honored by the league for her work in the community with her charitable foundation, Catch the Stars. She is nothing less than one of the greats of her game, and a lock for a spot in the Naismith Hall of Fame. More than anyone, she deserves to be called champion. I'm Mark Monteith, and in a rebroadcast of a conversation from 2009, I'm going one-on-one with Tamika Catchings.
This is One-on-One with Mark Monteith on 1070 The Fan. Brought to you by Georgetown Market, Indy's family-owned natural food store since 1973. Movie Time Video Productions, they make your memories last forever. And Robin Run Village, Central Indiana's finest continuing care retirement community.
Welcome to the West Side home of Indiana Fever star Tamika Catchings. Tamika, let's talk about your childhood first. We know that your father, Harvey, played 11 seasons in the NBA. He retired in 1985, and you were born in 1979. So do you have any memories of him playing?
I have a few. Mostly like for us, I have an older brother and an older sister, and the three of us were pretty much inseparable. And I more so remember like going to the gym and going to practices and being around that. And, you know, the games were just kind of like any kid. You know, you go for the mascots or you go for the food or, you know, just kind of more of a entertainment, just seeing all the people around. So never really got into like the whole basketball feel. But, for us, it was more like, okay, at practice, like I wanted to be my dad. Like, oh, Harvey Catchings, you know. And it was just, you know, just fun.
Which teams that he played for do you recall being around?
Milwaukee Bucks is pretty much the only one. That was the last team that he played for. But I was born in Jersey. He played for the New Jersey Nets, then got traded to Milwaukee. But before that, he played for the Los Angeles Clippers and the Philadelphia 76ers. So, but Milwaukee is the one that I remember. When he got done playing here for Milwaukee, we actually went overseas for a year, and he played in Italy for a year. So that was fun. That was like the one, the year that I really remember.
Was that a good experience?
It was a great experience, you know, but I was born with a hearing problem, a speech problem, and I had to wear hearing aids, had to wear glasses, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And so my parents never wanted me to learn Italian. It was hard enough for me to learn how to speak English. So like, so my sister's the one that got to learn all like the, you know, all the foreign languages. But like for me, I had to stick with English because it was, you know, at that point in time, my life just trying to, you know, catch up in that aspect.
We'll talk about that aspect of your life later, but after you were in Italy, you lived in both Texas and Illinois. How did the family wind up there after your dad finished playing?
Well, after Italy, actually, my mom and the three of us moved down to Abilene, Texas, and stayed a year with my grandparents down there. And my dad went to Chicago and kind of got things kind of jump-started for us. So we spent second grade down there and then moved up there for third grade. And I stayed up in Chicago from third grade until my sophomore year in high school. And then my junior and senior year, I ended up moving down to Texas with my mom.
Obviously, your interest in basketball grew from your father's career and the fact you grew up around the game. But were there any particular events or people outside your family who really gave you a passion for basketball?
Certain events or people. You know, soccer was actually my first sport that I really played organized. And I love soccer. I just love getting dirty. I love running around, running in the field. You know, I just loved it. And basketball, probably not until third grade was when my first organized basketball. My dad was our coach. My sister and I played together on an all-boys team. But as far as, like, when I first, like, really, really got into it, I probably wouldn't say until, like, sixth grade, where I was like, you know, like, I practiced and I went and I played and, you know, we did the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, we did all that stuff. But probably sixth grade was like when I was like, you know what, this is what I want to do. Seventh grade, I made my first goal. I want to play, you know, I want to be a professional basketball player. And, you know, it seems like from that point on, it was like, that's what I did. Like, school, basketball. Basketball school, you know, it was like, that's what I did.
You said in the seventh grade that you set that goal to play professionally. Now, was that something you actually wrote down? I mean, was it a class project where you wrote a paper about it, or what was that?
I'm sure it was a class project, but for me, it was like one of those things where it had to be a class project where, like, you know, we had to write down, what do you want to be, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it was kind of like, you know, I want to be a basketball player. I want to be a professional basketball player. And it's like, you know, write it down and put it on your mirror. Every single day you wake up, you look at it, you know, and that's pretty much what I did.
So what was it about basketball that made you decide to commit yourself to that sport?
Well, a lot of it had to do with my dad playing and just, you know, being around it at such an early age. But, you know, the one thing about my parents is they never pushed it on us. They never pushed, you got to do this, you got to do that. You know, it was always like, okay, well, what do you want to do? You know, I played basketball, I ran track, I did softball, we did soccer, you know. I played the baritone, I was in a band, you know, so like we did a whole bunch of different things, but at the end of the day, it was like, I want to play basketball, and my dad said, you know, I will help you however I can help you, in whatever aspect. If you want to go to the gym and spend an hour in there, 2 hours, 30 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is, that's what we'll do.
That's interesting, and it seems to be a formula. I mean, of all the people I've talked with for this show who had great success in basketball, it seems like they all came from a similar situation. Their parents supported them and encouraged them, but did not push them like a lot of parents seem to do today. That just doesn't work, does it?
It doesn't, you know, and I'm very thankful that my parents did it, because, you know, you look at so many athletes that get burnt out from whatever sport they're playing, and, you know, it is because their parents, you got to do this, you got to go there, and you got to, you know, put this many hours in, and you have to train, and you have to do this, and, you know, there's so many different aspects, but it's like there's, as a child, there's so many things that we were exposed to, you know, that we were able to do, that we had a lot of fun, that it wasn't like basketball was our world in third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. You know, the basketball was something we did, but it wasn't, you don't get paid for it, so it wasn't like, you know, something that my parents were like, okay, we got to do this, we got to do that, but when we made that commitment to do something, it was like, okay, you know, you made a commitment to play on in this basketball league, so you will abide by your commitment, but when it's done, you can do whatever else you want to do. And, you know, I really feel like parents nowadays, they put so much pressure on their kids to be successful and to make it, but you end up burning them out at such an early age. You know, you get these kids that it's like, I really don't want to practice today, but my parents are making me, you know, I want to be here and I want to do that. Well, if your mind's already gone somewhere else, you're wasting money being in the gym, or, you know, you're wasting time, not only your time, but my time, you know, because you don't really want to be here and you're not going to get better, you know, by doing it like that.
When you were playing high school basketball, was your dad a tough critic? I mean, would he talk to you about your games and what you were doing wrong?
Even today, he does the same thing, you know. And it was a big struggle for me early. It was a huge struggle just because, you know, I felt like our whole relationship was based on basketball, you know. And it's like, I felt like, yeah, he helped me get to where I was, but then it's like he became so critical of me. You know, you need to do this and you need to do that. And it's like, you know, I feel like a lot of my success has been based on just the fact that I've never been a selfish person. You know, and it's like, okay, yeah, you can shoot the ball 40 times a game and, you know, average 40 points a game, but if you don't win, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, like my thing was, I want to win. If we don't win, you know, like I want to win. That's all that matters to me is winning. You know, it doesn't matter. I don't want to be, I don't have to be the leading scorer, the leading rebounder, the leading whatever. I just, you know, like my whole mentality has always been like that. And I think for my dad, sometimes it's like, you know, you got to take over. You got to do this. And it's like, okay, Dad, but you know what? I will if I need. Well, you don't take over when you need to. And I'm like, okay, all right. You know, let's just rewind a little bit, you know, fast forward or whatever we need to do. But let's talk about something other than basketball.
I read where you said that as a kid, when you got in trouble around the house, that your father would take the basketball away from you.
Yeah, that was my punishment, you know, but it still didn't stop me there. They felt, well, I wasn't one of the girls that liked to, you know, be outside jump roping or playing with dolls. You know, like the basketball, I took my basketball everywhere with me. And, you know, it was like truly punishment for me not to have it with me wherever I was. So, you know, like anytime I got in trouble, my dad would say, you know what, well, you just can't play basketball. I'm just going to take the ball away. But he would look outside, I'd be out there, you know, my imagination ran wild. So I'd be out there, have my own imaginary basketball, dribbling, you know, shooting. I mean, like, that's just how I was as a kid. I loved the game. I still love the game that much where even now, you know, if I'm missing my shots, you'll see me. I'll just be sitting here sometimes just imagining myself on the court, you know, going over my footwork, looking at my fingers, you know, why did I miss that shot in the game? Why am I missing my layups? You know, just kind of going through my head, imagining different shots.
So where kids today play air guitar, you were playing air basketball.
Yep, air basketball, and I loved it.
When you were doing that, were you fantasizing about going one-on-one against a particular player, or were you playing a game in your head?
Playing a game in my head. You know, of course, I've had my favorites over the years, but Alonzo Mourning has always been, like, my favorite player, you know, and just I think the thing that I loved about him was just his attitude about the game. And I think we both have the same It's the same aggression, the same love for the game, you know, the same passion as far as, you know, if you need me to score, I can score. If you need me to rebound, I can rebound. If you need me to play defense, I can play defense. You know, whatever it is that your team needs, like, I feel like that's what I can bring. And I feel like that's what he brought. And, you know, so I've always loved, like, just watching him and just his passion, you know. You could always see in his face, like, how much he loved and cared about his teammates. And I hope that's what, you know, people see when I play.
Have you met Alonzo?
I've met him a couple times. Yeah, the first time I met him, it was like one of the NBA All-Star games, and I was young, probably like high school maybe. Yeah, I had to be high school, maybe a little bit younger. And my dad was like, okay, you know, I got a surprise for you, whatever, you know, Alonzo's gonna be here, and I'm gonna bring you down, you know, so you can meet him real quick. And I was like, you know me, I'm a little youngster. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna tell him I love him. I'm gonna tell him we're gonna get married. And this, you know, when I was young, so I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna tell him all these different things, right? So my sister, you know, hyping me up, like, yeah, you can tell him how much, you know, you got all the, because he was with the Charlotte Hornets then. He had all the Hornets. I had the sweatshirt, the jacket, the pillow, you know, I had posters all over. Oh man, I had everything. And so she was like, yeah, you can tell him this, you can tell him that. So I was like, all right. So my dad calls me down, you know, calls us down there, and like I'm down there, and he brings Alonzo over there, and my mouth just opens. I was like, and my dad's like, he's like nudging me, like, how you gonna, it's like, this is my daughter, Tamika. I was like, oh. And so, you know, we went back up. My dad was like, I can't believe you choked. I was like, I can't believe I choked either. Oh, that was the first time I met him. I've met him a couple times since then. You know, when I've met him, we haven't really talked, you know, like in depth, like, oh yeah, you know, I play, but I know he knows that, you know, that I like him a lot. You know, I respect him as a player, I should say. Yeah. And then Pat met him and told her, like, when I was at Tennessee, she brought me back. She happened to be on the same plane as him, and she brought me back, signed, like, note card on some Tennessee paper, like he had signed to Tamika. I was like, ah! She brought it back. It was like my inspiration, my motivation for the year.
Catching this talk, sibling rivalry, and reflects on the injury that nearly ended her career when this encore episode of One on One continues. Welcome back to One on One. Mark Monteith here with Indiana Fever star Tamika Catchings. She had an older sister to contend with while growing up. Sparks flew when they competed on the basketball court. But as Reggie Miller would tell you, having an older sister who plays basketball can be a real benefit. Catchings wound up at Tennessee, where she played on a national championship team as a freshman, but then suffered a severe knee injury as a senior.
Did you play much against guys growing up?
I played a lot against guys, and I hated playing against the girl. You know, I felt like it was disrespectful to have me play with the girls when I could be playing with the guys, you know. I mean, I was a typical tomboy. Like, I loved to get dirty. I loved to be, you know, physical. I loved just everything about, like, playing with the guys. I mean, I played basketball, soccer. I did football, you know, whatever the guys were playing. They'd be like, but I was, during the summertime, I was the first one they would call. Hey, Tamika, you want to come to the court? 7 o'clock in the morning. Like, we're going to the court. We're going up to Walden. Let's go, you know, and I mean, we'd all ride our bikes up the street, be out there all pretty much all day playing ball.
So the guys treated you as an equal on the basketball court?
They did. You know, I was one of the boys, you should say, you know, and it's kind of like I wasn't interested in them, like dating them. You know, I was interested in playing. Like, I wanted to play. And it wasn't until, obviously, I got older that I got, you know, like, oh, he's kind of cute. And hey, you know, hey.
Now, you have a twin sister.
No, not twin.
Oh, that's right, not a twin, but she's older, right?
She's older than me, 21 months.
Okay, now she played. She wound up at Illinois as a collegiate player. So were you two rivals growing up? I mean, did you play against one another a lot?
We played against each other. That never really went well. You know, one of us always ended up mad, stomping in the house, you know, blood coming from somewhere. So that really didn't work well. We had to pretty much play together. And my high school coach, Coach Matouche up in Chicago, he learned that really, really fast. When I was a freshman, Taj was a sophomore, he put us on a separate team, but we ended up having to guard each other. And it got really physical, got to the point where both of us pretty much just stomped out of the gym, and everybody just looking like, okay, what do we do now? You know, like, the catching sisters are mad at each other, and they're going to kill each other, so somebody needs to go that way, somebody needs to go that way. So after that, Coach never put us on separate teams. We always had to play together. But then, yeah, once we got to college, we had one game where Illinois played Tennessee. They came to Ohio. That was fun.
Tennessee won, I take it.
Tennessee won, but Illinois was up. They were up on us probably about a good 16, 18 points at halftime. Pat came and chewed us out. It changed the game.
Did you guard your sister in that game?
I did. It was fun. You know, she knows me better than I, you know. She knows every move. I know every one of her moves. So it's kind of like one of those things going back to the playground, you know, except now we have the referees and we have teammates. So we actually have to play with everybody else.
Now, she's older than you, but you obviously became the better collegiate player. Was there a certain point where you realized that you were better than her and were you able to kind of lord that over her?
I don't think I ever lorded it over her. I think for her, she was content with she didn't love basketball. My sister's the one, she's the girly girl. She liked the doll, you know, loved the doll. The tea parties, like, I'd have to trade off. Okay, I'll have a tea party with you if you'll come and play basketball with me, you know, like, if I didn't have anybody else to play with. Yeah. So, like, that was her passion, you know. She's into the houses, looking at houses and decorating and all that, you know. I wanted to play, period. Nothing else. I want to play. And so I think for my sister, it was more of a thing, especially in high school. She was content with being, you know, that defensive player. I was the offensive player. She was the defensive player. You know, she was the one making sure I got the ball, making sure I shot my shot, you know, like getting on me. You need to shoot. You need to do this. You need to do that. And, you know, so I think even as we got into college, it's kind of like, you know, she was the one that pushed me to be better than I was and to be the best that I can be.
When you played against her in that game in college, was there much conversation going on during the game between you two?
I'm sure there was a little bit, but it was all in fun, you know. It was all in fun. Of course, she thought that Illinois would beat us, but I was like, you know, at the end of the game, like, you know, we couldn't let that happen. Then you would hold that over my head for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. So I was glad we won.
What was the recruiting process like for you coming out of high school?
Recruiting process was, it was trying, you know. I wouldn't say it was difficult. I think we handled it really well. I was down in Texas with my mom, so, you know, like, literally I had, like, the big blue tubs that are probably, you know, what, 3-4 feet up above the ground, full of letters just from everywhere. And, you know, one of the things that my mom made sure was that, like, we had letters that we sent to coaches right away. Like, if we knew we weren't interested in them, we sent them letters like, you know, I appreciate you, your interest in me, but, you know, I don't want you to waste your time recruiting me when I already know that I'm not interested, basically. And I think coaches appreciated that because it wasn't like they had to waste any more paper, any phone calls, you know, me not picking up the phone because, you know, I know I'm not, you know, so it's kind of like a win-win situation. But then, of course, like, I narrowed it down to like my top five and sent them letters like, okay, you know, I am interested, and as we get closer to, you know, open period where we can actually talk and my recruiting visits and all that stuff, you know. So I did go to Illinois. I did more of a surprise visit, but I wanted to see what it was like, so I ended up going. And the thing about Illinois, then when I talked to my sister, she was like, you know, you have to think about it. Is it the best choice for you? You got to realize that you're a year younger than me, so you're going to have a year without me here. And is this the place that you want to be? And I think for her, you know, it's like, I know where your heart is. I know you want to go to University of Tennessee. And basically hearing her give me the okay to go made it so much easier. It's like, okay, well, you know what? I want to go to Tennessee.
We hear a lot about recruiting violations in men's basketball. Does it happen in the women's game too? I mean, are some players getting paid to go to certain schools, or do they get stuff to attend a certain school?
I don't hear about it. You know, of course, you hear jokes. You know, people would joke around about it just because I think, you know, when it does show up on the men's side and in the paper and stuff, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I know you got paid to go to Tennessee. And it's like, okay, yeah, ha-ha, funny, you know, and you try to come up with a comeback to say to them. But, you know, really, I would say the biggest thing for me that was kind of disappointing was just, you know, coaches bashing other schools. So it wasn't like, you know, I'm going to give you this, I'm going to give you that. It was just like, you know, and not necessarily in a bad way, but it's like, you know, you can come and you can build this program up and we can do this and we can do that. And it's like, you know what, I want to play for the best coach. And if I have the opportunity to do it, then I want to do it. You know, I didn't work this hard to get to a point where I'm still trying to be my best too. And I feel like if I can get surrounded by players that are really, really good and that I feel like are the best, like Schmeichel Holzclaw, I'm trying to, you know, I want to learn from her. I want to be like, you know, I want to do the things that she's done in the game.
You had a great career at Tennessee. You were an All-American there, but you had a serious knee injury your senior year. What happened there?
I tore my ACL in January playing Mississippi State. Probably like 4 minutes left to go in the game. You know, I came down on the right side, did an in and out at half court, and then dribbled in, came to a jump stop, and I remember throwing the ball up and just screaming, like, you know, and everybody just quiet, trying to figure out what's going on. Like, okay, you know, like, Jenny Moshak, my trainer, came, got me, took her to the back, and, you know, I was like, I'm fine. I just hyperextended my knee. I'm fine, you know. And she was like, no, we need to check this out, make sure, you know. Doctor came in, did the little ACL test, and they were like, well, you're going to go to the doctor in the morning. And I was like, what is it? I was looking, she was like, yeah, it might be your ACL.
Were you afraid then that your career might be over?
I think you definitely get scared because for me, it's like my goal, like you said, in seventh grade was to be a professional basketball player and I wanted to play in the NBA. But then when the WNBA came around, it's like, that's what I want to do. I want to play in the WNBA, you know? And so going into, you know, we had a chance to win the national championship that year and then it's like, I get hurt. Now, not only no national championship for me anyway, but the WNBA, I always compare it to like going to a store. You're not gonna buy a toy that's broke. You're gonna buy something that's brand new, you know. And it's like for me, it was like, man, you know, now they gotta wait a year for me to come back. They're not gonna want to wait, you know. They're gonna want somebody that can instantly come in and do something for them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, it was hard, but you know, definitely, I think with my faith, it helped me get through.
Catchings joins the Fever, who show impressive foresight in the WNBA draft when this encore episode of One on One continues. Anybody lost, look in, they get found. Know it when they hear. Back on One-on-One, Mark Monteith here, reliving my 2009 conversation with Fever star Tamika Catchings. She was drafted by the Fever despite her knee injury and had to wait a year to begin her pro career. But she quickly became one of the league's superstars, which raises a question. How would she do against men? She will let you know.
The Fever made you their first-round draft pick when you were coming out of college, which really showed a lot of foresight on their part because they knew they would have to wait a year on you. Were you surprised that they did that, given your knee injury?
Surprised? Yeah, I would say yeah. You know, I felt like I had a good chance of going somewhere, you know, but definitely, you know, going number three, third pick, you know, like you said, first year of the franchise, so it was kind of like nerve-wracking. You know, but I knew Nell had played for her and one of the junior Olympic teams. And so, like,
Nell Fortner, the coach.
Yeah, Nell Fortner at that time. And, you know, she was going with the national team. So, like, I knew her and I knew a lot of the players that were here. But, yeah, you know, definitely getting drafted and her knowing that I wasn't going to be able to play, you know, that year, it definitely took a lot of trust in, you know, what I would be capable of doing down the road.
You're 30 years old now.
Whew, don't remind me.
How long do you think you want to play or be able to play?
Whew. Lord willing, I would like to get through another Olympic. So London 2012, you know, I definitely want to be a part of that. I want to get married. I want to have kids, you know, live a normal life to an extent. So I think when that lucky guy comes and God, you know, blesses me with somebody that's great and that he wants in my life, you know, definitely have that opportunity to kind of make that next step and transition into another life. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I get my little nephews and they come. I get my little nephew that lives here. He comes over pretty much every day. And then, you know, my brother's kids, they come, you know, quite a bit. I really love that family. You know, like, I love being around my family. And, you know, one day, even me just thinking about having my family, like, it just makes me happy.
Would you be willing to cut short your basketball career for that?
I would. You know, winning a WNBA championship is something that I really want right now. You know, I've done the overseas and I've won over there, won in college, won in high school, you know, won at the Pee Wee League, you know, and it's just kind of like, it's been awesome. You know, it's been awesome, but the one thing that's missing is the WNBA championship.
Do you fear for the future of the WNBA? We hear a lot about teams losing money, franchises are shifting around, and even here with the Fever, there's speculation that they may not be back next year as a franchise. Do the players fear for the future of the league?
I don't fear for the WNBA. I think that the model that we followed has I feel like if we would have came right out the bat, like, okay, you know, demanding millions and NBA money, yeah, definitely I would fear for the WNBA. I don't think it would have lasted even a couple of years. But the fact that we've kind of built over the years what we have, and right now we're in a recession. Everybody's dealing with losing money and trying to figure out, you know, different ways to get money and ways, you know, for the professional industry, the sports industry, trying to get people in the stands, period. It's a struggle right now. So, you know, I definitely feel like once we get through this time of, you know, through the recession, give it a couple more years, yeah, it's tough, it's hard. You know, team might not be, you know, where they want to be or where they thought they were going to be. But I feel like this league has to sustain itself because it has to give our young girls something to dream and to look up to being a part of. So, you know, I feel like this need to stay around to give those young girls hope to be somebody and to do something one day.
You're obviously not getting what might be called NBA money. Does it bother the players in the league that they're not able to do better financially?
I'm sure there are some players that think about that. I mean, for me, I just look at it as an opportunity to be one of the pioneers for a league that one day, you know, like even listening to my dad sometimes talk about what he made compared to what the guys make now.
What did your dad make?
Like, maybe, what, 80,000? I mean, like, about 80,000, if that, you know? And so now you go from 80,000 to, like, the minimum for NBA players, like, 800,000, you know? I mean, and that's the player that doesn't even get off the bench. That I think for me, looking at being a pioneer and looking at providing an opportunity for the young girls that I'm reaching out to right now, doing camps and doing all kinds of things for, you know, those are the girls that are going to benefit from what we're doing now. And I look at it like that, and it's like, you know what? Somebody has to make a sacrifice at some point in time. And would I like to make, you know, millions? I mean, of course, who wouldn't? You know, what we make for playing 4 or 5 months is more than a lot of people make anyway, you know? So I'm grateful for the opportunity to be a part of a sport that I love and be able to get paid for going to gym class.
Gym class?
That's how I see it.
Do you mind saying what your salary is now?
Oh, mine? Well, we're not technically, but, well, yeah. I mean, it's published. The top salary that a WNBA player can, let's just do average. I'll do the average. Average salary is probably about $55,000.
Here's one. Do women trash talk during games?
Do women trash talk during games? Yeah. Yeah, you hear it. And I'm one of those players, like, I get so focused in the game that everything else is oblivious to me. You know, I don't pay attention to what other people say, but it's funny because then after the game, when my teammates are talking about, you know, so-and-so said this to me, and I'm like, what? Are you serious? Like, I never heard that. Meek, you don't hear nothing. And then they keep talking. I'm like, God. You know, like, it shocks me sometimes hearing what people say, but it's like, you know what? It is what it is. It's kind of become a part of the game.
You were a sports management major at Tennessee. Is there something in particular you'd like to do in sports after your playing career ends?
I want to be a general manager. I thought I wanted to be an owner, but you know, I've talked to some people over the years. They're like, "Why put your own money into it? You should look at the general manager aspect first, and you know, kind of diddle in that." And I think there's something that really. Like in watching our general manager and just over the years becoming more interested in learning about other organizations and trying to, you know, figure out if that's something that I could do. And I think it is something I want to do.
For a WNBA team?
For a WNBA or NBA, you know.
You said when you first started playing that you wanted to play in the NBA because the WNBA didn't exist at the time. Were you really focused on that? I mean, was being the first woman to play in the NBA a serious goal for you then?
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because Annie Myers is actually the first one that played, and she got tried out for the Pacers, and you know, she was in the building the other day a couple weeks ago when Phoenix came. She's the general manager for the Phoenix Mercury now, so you know, they did like a little interview with her and, you know, just kind of tribute thing for her, and it's kind of cool because like she had that opportunity. And then of course Nancy Lieberman with the Harlem Globetrotters. You know, just even having the opportunity. And I think for me, it's like, man, you know, I would be interested in just having an opportunity to try out and to see if I can, you know, if I can hang. And I really feel like, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit smaller. I can't, naturally, women are built differently than men, but I feel like I'll be able to hold my own to some extent.
There's a hypothetical question that people raise sometimes. They wonder, could the Fever, for example, beat a good men's college team? Or could a WNBA team beat a state high school boys championship team? And it's not important, obviously, because the WNBA is a viable league on its own, but do you have any feel for how high a level a boys team would have to get to before it could beat a WNBA team?
Never really thought about it. You know, of course, guys and their ego automatically, you know, when you walk anywhere in Indiana, in any restaurant, anybody that recognizes you, the first thing out of a guy's mouth, hey, you know, you're Twinkie Cousin, yeah, you know, hey, how you doing? I could beat you. Okay, conversation over, you know, you get that, oh, I'm a dunk on you. Okay, I've never been dunked on, and I swear, if you think you're going to be the first one, you'll end up in the hospital. I'm sorry. You know, so it's kind of like one of those situations that you really, you know, you don't think about it. And of course, a lot of kids, you know, when we go speak, a lot of kids, can you guys beat the Pacers? You know, you get that question. So it's more of a cute thing than anything.
Do you play men one-on-one very often now?
I do. I have a trainer. Well, I have a guy that I work out with here, Carlos Knox. Played at IUPUI. He used to do a lot of stuff with us over the last couple years. And had branched out and starting his own, you know, company, Knox Pro Train. So I work out with him a lot. We do the one-on-one things, you know, while I'm here and while he's here. But other than that, you know, just the coaches, and we bring guys in to practice again.
How do you do in those matchups? I mean, Carlos Knox was a good college player. He was one of the leading scorers in the country, and he had a tryout with the Pacers. How do those matchups go?
Matchups are great. You know, I win some, he wins some, but at the end of the day, you know, he's going to continue to train me, and, you know, I respect what he teaches me, and I respect, you know, the fact that of what he has been able to accomplish. And, you know, so definitely for me, it's kind of like, it's always a challenge, and I think that's the thing I love, because, like I said, on any given day, either one of us can win, and I love that.
Catchings discusses her childhood handicaps and how they motivated her to give back when this encore edition of One on One continues. We're back on One on One. I'm Mark Monteith, bringing back my 2009 conversation with Tamika Catchings, star of your WNBA champion, Indiana Fever. Just because her dad played in the NBA doesn't mean she led a storybook childhood. She had a hearing loss and speech impediment, not to mention braces and glasses. To say the least, she wasn't the most popular kid in school, but she drew strength from being an outcast.
You mentioned early on that you were born with a hearing loss and had a speech impediment as a result of that, and had braces and glasses and everything else. How much of a problem was that for you growing up? I mean, did you get teased a lot in school?
I got teased a whole lot. It was a huge struggle for me growing up, you know, just being different and wanting to fit in more than anything, like, you know, wanting to have to wear hearing aids and having to wear glasses and eventually braces and, you know, my speech problem. I mean, it just seemed like it was one thing after another after another. And as any kid, they don't want to be that oddball out. And I felt like that's what I was. And that's why sport became so important to me, because there was one area where, okay, you can make fun of me in the classroom, you can make fun of the way I look, the way I talk, but on the basketball court, you can't say anything, you know, because I'll shut you down on defense, or, you know, I'm gonna score on you, whatever it is, boy or girl, you know. And that was, I think that's where I got my competitive nature, is from that, you know, from having to deal with that. I was like, okay, well, yeah, well, let's go to the basketball courts, you know, I can beat you there. And, you know, nobody wanted to fool with me there. And so it's kind of like, that was the thing. Sports had been the thing that has, you know, kind of, even now, you know, like when I got a lot of stuff on my mind, or I'm happy, mad, sad, whatever it is, like when I'm on the court, nothing else matters.
Who gave you the most trouble in school, the boys or the girls?
Both, you know. I mean, I'd have to go to my speech pathologist, so she'd come and get me from class, and everybody wants to know, why did she get to leave? You know, and it's like, I got embarrassed. I have a speech problem, and I have to go get, you know, like, you don't, it's not something that you want to explain as a youngster. So, you know, I really struggled.
What kind of things did the kids say to you? I mean, anything that sticks out in your memory that really bothered you?
Well, the glasses, the typical four-eyed, or, you know, like, making fun of the way I talked, you know, because, you know, sometimes stuttering, and, you know, it's just like a little bit of everything. You know, wearing my hearing aids, like I had the big ones that go behind the ear, like, what's that big box doing that? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's nothing, you know, why do you have two of them? There's one on each, you know. It's kind of like, you don't want to deal with that.
You do a lot of charity work now. I mean, in fact, you've been honored for that. It seems that there's a connection between Tamika Catchings, the little girl who is teased a lot, and the grown-up Tamika Catchings who reaches out to other kids. I mean, did your experiences as a child motivate you to help others?
Definitely. You know, we have the Catch the Stars Foundation, which we founded in 2004. And, you know, we're catered toward underprivileged youth, boys and girls, ages 9 to 16. And, you know, we have a lot of academic and sports-related programs. But the biggest thing for me is the relationship that you're able to build, and being able to go out. We always have a session with everything that we do. It's a little bit about self-esteem, that talks a little bit about, you know, being the best you that you can be, and setting goals. And, you know, I think that's the thing that I love doing more than anything, is providing, you know, showing these kids, like, yeah, what I do is fun. I love playing basketball, and, you know, I've made a lot of sacrifices to get to where I'm at, but I had to go through a lot too. And I think a lot of kids they think that they're the only one that, I'm the only one that's ever had to wear hearing aids. I'm the only one that's ever had a speech problem. I'm the only one that has to wear glasses, you know. They think that they're the only one, but when they see somebody at our level that's made it to maybe where they aspire to be, you know, one day, then it opens their eyes up to a whole nother, like, okay, well, you know, she had a hearing problem, and she had speech problem, and she had, you know, hearing aids and glasses, and she had braces like I did, you know, and I'm sure people talked about her teeth, you know, I mean, just knowing that there's other people that are, to some extent, you know, people put athletes on a pedestal, you know, but so for them, oh man, you know, that's my idol, that's who I want to be like one day. Well, you know, she could do it, I know I can do it, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing for me, is just being able to provide that for these kids.
So now, looking back on your childhood, are you glad that you went through the things you did with the hearing and the speech issues and all that?
I am, definitely. I feel like God only puts you through what he knows you can handle. And he definitely put me through a lot early on. But as I've gotten older and the situations and the things that I deal with now aren't necessarily as hard as they were back then. Because as a kid, you don't understand, why are they doing this? Why are they saying these things? You know, I want to fit in. I want to be like everybody else. You don't understand why you have to be different. But now I look at my difference and the person that I am, and I appreciate the things that I had to go through to get to where I'm at today.
Okay, here's the off-the-wall question that I ask everybody.
Uh-oh.
When you dream at night, do you dream about playing basketball?
When I dream at night, do I dream of playing basketball? A lot of times, yeah.
Are you in a WNBA game or a college game?
I'm just in a game. It's, yeah. I mean, like, seriously, the other night I woke up in the middle of the night soaking wet. I went back to sleep. When I woke up, I was completely dry. It's the weirdest thing. So then they were like, well, what were you dreaming about? Shay was like, you're probably dreaming about running away from somebody or running somewhere. I was like, you know what? I was on the court. Like, I remember being on the court, like, doing something. I said, I must have played the whole game and just, like, sitting on the bench or something, soaking wet.
Do you play well in your dreams or poorly?
I play well, and it kind of depends on what happened. Like, it takes me forever to go to sleep after a game, especially when we lose, you know? So, like, I replay every shot that I miss, everything that I did wrong. And, you know, like, we have a sports psychologist that we work with, and he's always like, you know, when you do that, you have to go through each shot again, after you go through what you did wrong and correct it in your mind, so that when you do it next time, you've already corrected it in your mind, so it doesn't remember what you did, like, oh, I missed a shot, oh, God. A lot of it is mental.
One-on-one with Tamika Catchings returns in a moment, and I will make a confession. Well, I hope you enjoyed the replay of my 2009 conversation with the star of the Fever's run to the WNBA championship, Tamika Catchings. She's got quite a story. Those childhood handicaps strengthened her resolve in basketball, which provided an outlet for her anger. And now she's giving back to kids who might experience some of the same challenges she once faced. As for basketball, there's no doubt she's going to be in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame someday. Let's face it, her credentials are even better than those of Reggie Miller, who, by the way, would probably be a great choice as one of her presenters, given his support of women's basketball before it was the cool thing to do. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. Catchings ought to have a few more good years left to play in the WNBA. And by the way, this conversation took place at Catchings' home. I used a portable recorder with clip-on mics, but I later discovered my mic had malfunctioned. So I had to go back and re-record the questions and try to make them sound live. I think I needed to take a few acting lessons to pull that off. Hey, that's showbiz. And as always, if you missed part of this conversation with Tamika Catchings or want to hear one of the others in the one-on-one library, go to the website at 1070thefan.com. Click on shows, click on the one-on-one link, click on the podcast link, and you'll have access to every episode. If you need to reach me, the email address is mark@1070thefan.com, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter handle is @MarkMonteith. And next week, I'll be back with yet another spine-tingling conversation with an Indiana sports personality right here on 1070 The Fan.